Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think one of the ways you can understand the health of Formula One is if you go to the race meeting and you prefer the F2 race, then they're in trouble.
Everybody looked like a zombie. And they were, like, everyone was shattered after Las Vegas.
And that meant that if you were driving at about 100 miles an hour down the motorway, you'd get probably 3 minutes of a radio station before it cuts straight to something else. Hello, and welcome to episode 43 of the Collecting Addicts podcast. I said 43 a second ago, and Manish went, "That's a prime number." Everyone else nodded. I don't even know what a prime number is. Apparently, it's a number that's not divisible by anything apart from itself, according to Neil Clifford,
who and
got one A at O level, but it happened to be in maths, clearly. We are now going to go. He's objecting and looking around in his lair because he looks like a baddie from the Italian job. Okay, straight into Formula One. We have to go straight to Manish because he was there on the ground to see what the Times yesterday voted the worst race of 2023.
Did it?
Yes, it did. Talk us through it.
Well, I had an amazing weekend, and it was, you know, partly race, partly a few bits and pieces to do with my professional life. But I have to say, my big observation was that the paddock was maybe two-thirds full compared to other Abu Dhabi races. And, you know, even compared to last year, and the championship was decided last year, well in advance too, what I did see were zombies. Everybody wow. looked like a zombie. And they were, like, everyone was shattered after Las Vegas. And when you had little chats with people, I mean, we were guests of McLaren and talking to the peers, Andrea, and even Zach, they've normally got a big reserve of energy, but 22 Grand Prix and having this race a week after Las Vegas. I mean, I think it was Piers who was saying that, no, actually it was somebody from Mercedes who was saying, you know, the delayed practice that in Las Vegas, you know, because of the manhole cover, blah, 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 just shot everything off. He said, we were walking back from the circuit as the sun was rising and we had sort of negative jet lag. In other words, you want to get up super early. And so we couldn't go to sleep. By the time we went to sleep, the alarm went off saying, right, you've got to get back onto the circuit. And they basically then had a 12-hour journey to Abu Dhabi after that. Trying not to be boring here, but I think, you know, they are going to have to look at this schedule because you just can't have that. And that wasn't, you know, that wasn't a minority opinion. That was a majority opinion. They were just absolutely done. And, you know,
there are a thousand racing drivers listening to this who would say, if they're too tired, those precious little drivers, I'll do it.
It wasn't the drivers. Honestly, it was the team.
I know. But you know what I'm saying about what drivers are like.
No, listen. I mean, I didn't get any sense of prima donna syndrome. And what you ended up with actually was, you know, it was a bit of a processional race. I think there were two things up for grabs, neither of which particularly grabbed the public's imagination, who was going to come P3, who was going to come P4. I think Charles, in retrospect, did make a very slight strategic error in his timing of letting Perez go. Because they're saying, had he been a second slower, Ferrari probably would have done it, wouldn't they? Because of the 5 seconds.
He'd done it two laps earlier. He probably would have been fine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, it Abu Dhabi very often, I mean, ironically, I wasn't there in 2021. It's the only one I've missed. But it does tend to be a pretty end of the year, most things are decided type of race. I have to say, this year, it had a kind of very deep lethargy about it. And how do you follow Las Vegas in a way? We had every kind of drama. Imagine, you have the last, and they pay a big premium, by the way, for this.
Yeah, I've got two questions for you, manager, someone who's on the ground there. First of all, if you're a wealthy emirate and you pay handsomely to have the last race, and then the organisers decide to host their biggest self-funded Fandango the weekend before, surely your lawyers will knock on their door and say, this is not what we're paying for. And second of all, I remember going there when it just opened. Mercedes launched the SLS there, actually. And I remember going out there to drive it. And the English guy that was running the circuit, whose name escapes me.
Martin Whittaker?
Yes, I think it was. It was, yeah. He said 18 months ago, this wasn't here. Mm. I just remember thinking, I don't really understand. Civil engineering projects for countries that have got serious money happen so much faster. We can't build HS2 in 2 decades. They can build an entire island with a race circuit on it in about 18 months. Amazing, isn't it?
But $1.32 billion.
It's extraordinary. But it is when you drive it, it's a circuit that flows in a road car. It does. It's got massive straights. But why does it not give us any overtaking? It's really strange. On paper, it's a circuit that should be fantastic every time, because it's got long straights into slow corners, and it's got some good high downforce stuff as well.
But it never really delivers,
and I'm sure there's someone with a big forehead that'll be able to tell us exactly why. But we often
do you think it might be due to the fact that the hybrid part of it, which is the sort of street part of it, running in and out of the hotel and the marina, a lot of right angled corners, a lot of very slow corners. Normally, you would want, I guess, a high downforce setup to really attack those as much as you can attack a 90 degree corner. The thing is, as you point out, the two straights though are so long that you can't have a high downforce setup. And so what you end up doing is you create a car that bombs down the straights, but that's basically skittish everywhere else. And it's a funny point that you make, because I had a chat with again, a Mercedes engineer about this. And I said to him, there's a lot of hype about how fantastically compressed the field is, the racing has never been closer. And I said, what happened to that old adage where a driver said about another driver, oh, he's half a second faster than that guy? Because, if you've got a field that's compressed by 6/10 of a second from P1 to P20, and there are drivers who are half a second faster than other drivers, how does that manifest? And he said what you said, Chris, a while ago. He said, this is a very, very tire-limited formula now. You just burn your
I took a screen grab when I watched the race. This is lap 6. I think the commentators said this was the best DRS, the best example of DRS train they've ever seen. So if I don't know if you can see this, but I think everyone but two cars is within a second.
Yeah, Sainz and Sargeant.
Everyone apart from Sargeant is within DRS zone of the driver in front. So you just had this bizarre spectacle of, 18,000 horsepower pumping around the circuit, looking like they are towing each other with ropes.
I think,
having watched the F2 race as well, which was an absolute humdinger before.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think Edward's very good at this. Edward has denominators of the health of the car market, and they are the EFL markers. So he'll plot things like 275, 27 RS, 911 turbos, just to understand the health of the car market. I think one of the ways you can understand the health of Formula One is if you go to the race meeting and you prefer the F2 race, then they're in trouble. Yeah. And I think that's happening a bit now. You turn up there, and the F2, they look hungrier. They look there's wheel to wheel racing,
and they sound way better. You're sitting in the grandstand after the F2 race. You go, ooh, bits of my innards move. Then the Formula One cars come out, and it is a bit this.
Well, F2 is a V8. Yeah. V8 engine, normally aspirated,
It's a new category next year. I was watching the F2 cars. On. Well, the F2 cars, you think to yourself, why would you buy a Valkyrie? Why wouldn't you just go and buy a used 2023 F2 car with the support package? What's that going to be? £1 million, probably, isn't it now? After it's been used, maybe less. Turn up and just roast all the Valkyries and supercars and hypercars at a track day. Fantastic bit of kit.
Yeah.
You can't drive a mate there, though.
No, you'd probably get number plates on it though, because you've probably got a man, haven't you, Neil? That I'll get a plate on that, Neil. Right, what did you watch it, Neil Clifford?
No, I watched the Spurs Aston Villa game. you know what? I watched the quali because you always have this naive, optimistic view that the quali is going to be exciting. So you watch, I watched that, and then I watched the start of the race, and then after about 20 minutes, you're like, oh, you know. I've got to watch all of this because I've got to have something interesting to say on my little podcast. But then I thought, oh, bollocks, I'm going to watch the football instead because this doesn't look that interesting.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a sad state of affairs, but I'm sure everyone knows who's won. What was the issue of does Mercedes finish ahead of Ferrari or ahead of McLaren in the constructors? Was there a whole sort of little thing there that needed to be resolved?
A little thing there. A bit of money, a bit of honour.
How much money?
£10 million, probably.
£10 million.
Is that what it is? First and second, yeah.
Finished second Mercedes, didn't they?
Yeah, they got it.
Ferrari
looked so... You saw the Mercedes pit. They kind of looked like they'd won the championship, frankly. And Ferrari, who have actually won a race, they really looked so pissed off. I mean, they were so... Because it hit them how close
either.
They
were. Not surprised either, because actually... another sage-like voice in Formula One, I don't know who it was defining drivers and teams by how they maximise their position with the worst machinery when they're at their worst. And you have to say of Mercedes that should be their absolute annus horribilis. And they've come second in the Constructors' Championship and beaten Ferrari, as Manish says, who won a race.
Yeah.
So actually, if you can do that with this dog turd of a car, is it the W14 this year? I can't remember. I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Lewis taking a photograph of it saying one last go in this thing before the start of the race. I mean, it's not a ringing endorsement, is it? And they still come second. So I don't know. But then there's all these tapered rules about time in the wind tunnel. I mean, it's so complicated. There used to be those brilliant spoof cricket commentary tapes by the guy called Billy Birmingham, the 12th man.
12th man, brilliant.
And if you're into your cricket, there was a thing called the Duckworth-Lewis method. You might be aware of this. So the Duckworth-Lewis method was the way of calculating what score you had to hit if a game was rain affected. And they used to take the piss. The calculation was so nuanced and complicated that they used to involve the number of spanners in a particular tool set on the day in the Billy Birmingham tapes. But it's a bit like that for me. When you read these rules, like... apparently, Mercedes gets 17% more wind tunnel. Who polices all this? Is there a bloke from the FIA?
Going,
you can't go for a...
Ooh, auditors.
You're at max there. You can't go for a wee. I mean, what? Who polices all of it?
Yeah.
It's all a load of bollocks.
Is there going to be any changes over the winter season?
Sadly not.
No. Same cars on the grid.
There's a change for 26, but that's all.
There was a sort of another distant kind of very vacant look in people's eyes, because obviously the cost cap...
Like us then.
Like us at 8 a.m. No, but the cost cap means that they really can't... You know, Mercedes, this is the point that I made. In 2022, if we had no cost cap... No, cost cap's good for the team, stability, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, some bloke in Stuttgart would say, right, we're not in here to come second. We're spending $1.32 billion because we're going to beat Red Bull this year. And that was the kind of, you know, knives out Formula
I'm
One.
I'm not sure they would. I reckon that same FD might have gone, sales of the EQS aren't that clever.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be spending a billion. So maybe Mercedes has been more protected by the cost cap than people realise.
Yeah, and I think that spend $1.32 billion a year has been... It doesn't... They've tried that before. I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, Niki Lauda banging, you know, in Jaguar days when he was running Jaguar Racing for 5 minutes alongside all those other people that had 5 minutes running it. On a Monday morning, he would literally bang the table and say, "We must make the car faster." Thanks, Nicky.
You said there's no change, there's no engine changes or wheel tire changes, but clearly they
don't work on their aero packages. No, Edward, they say Red Bull stopped developing that car in somewhere around July and August. So what he's driving now, God knows what they've built for next year.
I think my slightly acerbic guess for next year is this: that Red Bull will, Max will win the first three races by a margin that everyone finds so ridiculous. And then someone will go into the FIA cupboard marked Bernie's old stuff and find the Bernie button. And they'll dust it down and go, "Ooh, what does this do?" And someone will press it halfway through race number four and Max's car will shit itself. And then suddenly we'll have a very close racing season afterwards. Yeah. I think Formula One is facing an existential problem, isn't it? It's Max openly mocks the race series now, and he has every right to. He says, people are going, "Do you miss going wheel to wheel?" He says, "No, I want to dominate. I want to turn up. I've no interest in racing wheel to wheel. And now I want to work out how to dominate further." But in doing that, he's just ruining the spectacle of the sport for everyone else. But it is not his responsibility to generate racing. It's his responsibility to go and win.
Isn't it Adrian Newey ruining the sport, though? He's the genius, isn't he?
I think it takes two. You know, what is Checo doing in that car? You know, I know it's built around Max, but if Max wasn't in it, then Red Bull wouldn't have won the series. They wouldn't have won the championship.
It sort of favours the V corner driver
rather than the U corner driver.
Yeah, but I think whatever car you give Max right now,
He doesn't like a car with anything. Beginning of the year, it was slightly tiny little bit more understeer.
It was. But if you gave him 11 identical lawnmowers and said, "Mow that," he'd still be quickest.
It wouldn't be as quick as the gap wouldn't be as big. And Checo is too much of a U-shaped corner driver.
Have you guys seen the Alex Albon interview about Max's driving style? It's absolutely fantastic. Jake Humphries interviewed him. It's 2 minutes long. It's really worth having a look.
Yeah, because Alex is a U-shape. You know, he wants to make, you know, one radius rather than sort of turn in a bit. It's a bit like Rob Wilson. You ever use Rob Wilson, Monkey, as a
driving coach? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He used to turn up to Bruntingthorpe in a rental Vauxhall Astra. I'd meet at the cafe. He'd be on his fourth fag and third espresso.
Yeah.
And then Kimi Räikkönen would turn up for a driving lesson.
Yeah, in another Vauxhall Astra. So Rob's technique was always sort of like Snetterton at the end of the old backstreet. Snetterton was, rather than going all the way down and then one turn, it's like turn a bit more and get the car ready for what's going to happen next. So you sort of like shorten the distance. And then the last turn would be tighter. But because it's a shorter bit of tarmac, even though you've overwhelmed the tyre, it's not for very long. And it actually just shortens the lap when you do fewer metres and it's faster. Vettel was like that. Lewis is a bit like that. Max is the epitome of that. Whereas,
Did you hear what Albon said to me?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
He understand it. He said, if you get a cursor on a computer and you just turn the sensitivity right up on your mouse, you know what happens when you move the mouse just a very little bit, the cursor's just moving all over the place. He said, that is how Max likes a car set up. And I thought that was the most eloquent explanation. He said, everybody else, we're used to sensitivity. He says, you know, I'm a racing driver, but Max's level of sensitivity is just, it's unmanageable for normal drivers.
I think we are seeing something spectacular with him.
Yeah.
I pity the rest of the field, and I pity the sport in many ways. Perhaps, my end comment is, I don't understand why Lewis is carrying on. He keeps promising this next championship.
Yeah.
I'm a massive Lewis fan. I'd love him to get it, but I don't really see it at the moment.
This is a horrible prophecy. I'm not sure he's going to win a race in a Mercedes again.
Ooh.
I really fear for them.
Why don't they give him the seat, the second Red Bull seat?
Well, that's the chat this weekend, wasn't it? It's all a bit scurrilous and sort of.
I reckon if his Berniness was still in the sport, he would do something drastic over the winter. He would go, right, Oi, Lewis, you're going to Red Bull. Get rid of that Monster shit. Get one of those tropical ones. It's nice, that one.
And they've lost Monster. Mercedes have lost Monster. It's gone to because Zach, the man
is McLaren.
Yeah, it's gone to McLaren, who already got 75 million sponsors. Clearly,
make it exciting next year, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be brilliant. I just a general swap around, let's see what happens. All right, have we exhausted Formula One? If we have, we're going to move on.
Quite some time ago,
a much much thornier issue, and that is, from Edward Lovett, this is DAB radio a fraud?
No, you say it's from me. I just selected the topic.
No, it's from you. Just
I think it's actually from Neil.
You're wearing your Bastardo shirt. Are we getting a percentage on that or not? I fucking hope so. Right. Okay. DAB radio. I have to say I have strong opinions on this because I have vehicles that have it and that don't have it. And I vacillate hugely on this subject. So I'm going to go over to Neil Clifford, who I know is a big fan of the Archers.
Well, I think it's slightly fraudulent, DAB. But it might be that I live in the Chilterns, and don't get me on 5G. I think that needs to be another subject. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but actually it's worse than bloody 3G, 5G. But on DAB, it runs out all the time and it makes that horrible bloody noise. And then I have to switch back to FM, which frankly, when you do that, FM is lovely. 93.5 Radio 4. Is a gorgeous little radio setting, isn't it? I mean, you can't get Radio 5 because that's bloody on medium wave, and medium wave is officially shit, as we know now, even though we all used to love it in the olden days. You can't use medium wave. So if you haven't got Bluetooth streaming and, heaven forbid, CarPlay, and you are going on long drives in hilly places, DAB can be quite a challenge, and then you don't get your Radio 6, which... I desperately try to like Radio 6. I've got a lot of friends that are immensely passionate about Radio 6 is possibly the best invention in the history of the world. I can't really get into it, in truth. And I'm not really getting the vibe completely on Radio 2 because it is all a little bit Neil Diamond still. So I'm a bit stuck in the middle. You know,
Neil Clifford, you are at what parents call that awkward age.
Oh, because you put on Radio 2 sometimes and they're playing Oasis or Blur or something. Like, oh, okay, Radio 2. I've got Radio 2 now. It's talking to the cool 50-year-olds. And then it goes back to bloody Elvin Stardust within two songs, doesn't it? And you have to turn the bloody thing off.
One click from Gary Glisser.
Also confirms why, actually, the first indicator that someone other than you has been driving your car is the radio station. When we got dragged out of a Welsh forest at about 11 o'clock at night on Friday night, the crew had very kindly bought Bryn, my co-driver's Yaris GR, what a car that is, to us. And we were a bit pissed off. He got in it and he went, well, I've not been driving it. It's on fucking Radio 1. you immediately know, don't you? Because you wouldn't have it on there.
We're going to talk about this later a bit. We've all got our trusty little fabulous people that help us out with cars. And I have a couple. One is called Pat. And Pat, I've known for many, many years. Whenever Pat's in the car and sorts me out with a new battery or a bulb or something, it's got LBC. You're getting this fucking LBC on.
When we do...
Who wants to listen to LBC? And I adore Pat, but I don't love LBC at all.
When we do OCD... We're going to talk about that's where the finger of truth and justice came from.
Yeah, but that's
radio.
With you, OCD is another entire season of shows. I mean, I'm bad, but you're a different league. So I remember when DAB, the first car I drove that had DAB in it, a DAB headset, as they were called then, didn't work. It was a Trevor from Blackpool. So TVR Tuscan. And I remember being presented with the vehicle as you were told straight away by P. Wheeler and the crew that it was faster than anything that had gone before, better than a Porsche. Got in. They said, this is radio. That means you don't need an aerial sticking out that's ugly. That was one of the main benefits. You didn't need a big, ugly aerial. And it'll get any station anywhere. And I remember sitting with Steve Sutcliffe all the way back from Millbrook to Teddington. And I just about heard something like Angela Rippon fart for about 2 seconds. I couldn't hear anything, nothing. We couldn't get a single station on this thing at all.
Yeah.
And I've not, my relationship with it has been on and off really ever since. Because if you're like me and you're a cricket tragic, your relationship with the radio is really bound into either 198 long wave or wherever you can get a stream of the cricket commentary. And I can remember, I mean, I have... incredible memories of when I was younger. My father would actually, he would actually choose routes cross country when we were going to do things to avoid power cables and bridges so that the service for the cricket wasn't interrupted.
Oh, I love that.
Remember my mother saying, why are we going this way? And he said, well, because there's power cables down that road there and the radio cuts out. And that would be his little Motorola. It only had long wave, that radio in the car. He'd have it swapped from car to car. So we ended up with an Audi Quattro with a long wave radio in it.
Oh, I love it.
Another one.
Is there a better combination?
Ridiculous. But DAB was supposed to be the savior for people like me. But this is the new digital solution that's been around 20 years that doesn't really like hilly ground.
It doesn't work. It is a bit of a fraud. And it's when you drive from Cornwall back up here, there's a dip on the A30 near Okehampton where Pirate Radio, which is the Cornish, if you're in Cornwall, you know Pirate and love Pirate. It just stops. And you think, I can see why it stops, because the DAB things, they don't cover the whole country. They've got a license to cover a little bit. Otherwise, everything would be available everywhere. But it's a bit like the difference between when iPhone started working properly, the quality of the phone conversation was completely different from a landline. But sometimes it just don't work. So here we've got dodgy. We used to have really good, because we're on top of a hill. I can see Neil's house from here. We're on top of a hill just across the border in Hertfordshire. You think mobile reception should be brilliant. 4G, this doesn't work. So you call somebody on the landline and it's like talking through three socks. And you think, well, at least you can hear them. And FM's a bit like that. At least you can hear it. It's a bit shit.
Yeah.
DAB is another example of some beardy people sitting in a lab thinking, I've got a brilliant idea for how we're going to get rid of all those problems of the quality of an analog signal. But it doesn't work. It's a fraud.
I'll let you into how pathetic the cricket tragic's life is. So the black 911 I had that sadly expired in the Wye Valley, that was a car that I specified myself and it had DAB in it. The reason why you have to tick the DAB box in a Porsche is it doesn't offer long wave on the hi-fi anymore. And then, like many VW products, its replacement, the Banana, I didn't spec. It wasn't owned by me first. And so it doesn't have long wave, nor does it have DAB. So all I can do is put my iPod thing in and make my phone go on to... And actually, you have better results streaming it through your phone line than you do on DAB, which surely is the ultimate accolade.
Weird.
DAB is no good. You're better off listening to Radio 6, streaming it on sounds through your cable into your hi-fi, aren't you?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Edward Lovett, you started this subject. You've not said three-fifths of bugger all. Say something.
Well, I'm listening. And also, this is... All you need is Spotify, isn't it?
There we go.
I was just thinking about the black spots. I'm not, as I've said recently, I haven't driven outside of London much recently. So for me, Reading to Cheveley, that's a black spot area for mobile phone coverage and for DAB. So I've totally given up on DAB.
Yeah, that is.
It lets me down there.
Edward, are you under some sort of curfew? Is that why they're not letting you outside London in the car?
No, I just don't drive outside of London very often.
You got one of those things around your ankle?
That's just on the other foot.
All right, okay.
and in America, when you get into these rental cars, when we talked about the rental car race, obviously you get in, seat in position, navigation set up as quickly as possible. And then I find the hardest thing, the next 2 hours of my journey from the airport, slightly jet lagged, is trying to choose one of the 3,238 radio stations available in that area at any one time. How do you choose a radio station when you arrive in a new country?
Except America.
Well, internet radio in California is hilarious. And of course, when you have a Californian car in the UK, you always end up going, you're stuck on internet radio. Why don't we have internet radio?
Yeah.
You think it's the best thing ever. Then you go to LA and you realize, actually, this is just confusing. But nothing...
That is DAB, effectively, isn't it? It's different.
Different.
So, internet radio. The Riviera Radio in the VAR, Saint-Tropez, you can get that on internet radio, but you couldn't get it on DAB.
But
Riviera Radio, you're not NRG.
NRG.
I prefer Riviera.
But surely the best place of all is Italy. I was the great Peter Robinson, when I used to go and drive out there with him. In fact, if you like Robbo, Peter Robinson, read the book, because there's a big load of stuff in him about him in there, because he's wonderful. I remember going out there to work the first time, he would just be at his wit's end about the way they ran the radio licenses in Northern Italy. It was just a zoo. You could establish anything wherever you wanted to. You could do whatever you wanted. And that meant that if you were driving at about 100 miles an hour down the motorway, you'd get probably 3 minutes of a radio station before it cut straight to something else. You know that sequence that Blackadder goes forth when Rowan Atkinson pretends to be interference? He's Gale Force, yep. 8. That is Italian radio. That's the way they work the franchises. It's brilliant.
I know we talked about the Blaupunkt and different varieties of stereos that there are, and it is a massive bugbear when you get into a car you don't quite know and you want to listen to radio and you're trying to figure out how best to navigate your way through the radio stations. And some of them, especially, and this is more of an FM problem, not a DAB problem, but when you press search, because you're trying to get to, let's say, Radio 1, and the reception's not quite strong enough that it just flies past 97.6 or whatever it is.
But if you do that in DAB, if you get in a car and they've got, I don't know, an Alpina single DIN head unit, and you try to find a radio station DAB, you will sell the car before you end up finding anything on DAB. It's genuinely impossible to tune.
It's a nightmare. Yeah.
It's amazing how we attribute different numbers to our lives. The significant number for Neil is 93.5. That means nothing down where we are. We are 94.3. That's Radio 4. You say 93.5, yeah. I'd go, that could be anything.
But sometimes 92.9.
What is that? You can't drop into 92.9, 93.5. You can't drop into the 92s. That just totally freaks me out.
Yeah,
92.9 is Radio 3, mate. That's just
That's 88.
Deary.
Mate. Oh no, it's 91, isn't it?
We're moving on. We've exhausted DAB, which by common consensus is disappointing. I think is the word. It's disappointing. Fag lighters. God knows how we're going to talk about this again. I would love it. Pose this one. It's brilliant.
I am going to start with this one because it brought back fond memories and. I've got three young children now, and I don't have a fire.
Can I say that? Should I say cigarette lighter? I probably should, shouldn't I? Sorry.
Well, you can do. We don't have a fire in London, but when we go and visit my parents, they like the log fire lit. So obviously you're having to tell your parents or tell your children, don't get too close to the fire. Don't get too close to the fire, because they're not used to the fire. So it's fascinating. They want to get close to it. And then my mother's saying, don't worry, they'll only touch it once. They'll only touch it once. And so I was told that as a child, obviously. But you're always curious. And sat in the back of a car with your parents driving, clearly the cigarette lighter or whatever we want to call it is there. So you can't help yourself but press it. You wait 30 seconds and it pops out. Yeah. And then you can see it's red. And obviously, I don't really want to test it on myself to see how hot it is, but my sister's leg feels like an appropriate place to see how hot it is. And that's where I learned they'll only do it once.
Yeah, very good. Also, Edward, you've massively undone yourself there, because not many cars had fag lighters at the back in the 1980s. You've let yourself down there.
Hold on a second. They all had it armrest.
They didn't.
You needed to. You were anything less than a 7 Series or an S Class. You were not offered
a rough
lighter.
Day. It's like a rear headrest. Fine.
The car I was in had a fag lighter.
Yeah, we know that.
You're telling me that your dear father was taking you to school in that bright white silver shadow again?
he absolutely was, which was why I went to a school on the outskirts of Swindon called Pinewood. And I learned about bullying at Pinewood. I wasn't the bully. And I was like, if your dad doesn't give us a Porsche, you're dead meat.
Literally give him one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the script. Yeah.
The cigarette lighter.
Anyway, sorry to my sister for burning your leg with that cigarette lighter.
So I used to smoke in the cars when I was younger, and there was a whole skill to it that's just, it's an art that's been lost now. So to start with, because Quentin Wilson had given his 10 checks for a used car, one of which was it look at the fag light straight away. And if it's been, if his fag light has been used, then the car's terrible. Why we thought that, I don't know, but we just did. So what you do is you had to brace your arm on something, your left arm, have the smoke in the right there, and be able to, if you got the thing within 3 mil, there was enough residual heat, you didn't have to touch it, it would light the fag. So right. your fag light would remain unsullied. But there was a whole other method. Like, a lot of cars, no one had leather upholstery. So the velour, if you got a little blimp on there, then the whole thing would just burn up. So you had to be really careful with your airflow. You, when you got a new car, you worked out the Venturi effect. Like you were a pocket Adrian Newey. You knew exactly the aerodynamic qualities of that window. So you could just, Neil Clipper's nodding because he knows this. So you could just give a little light brush of the thumb on the filter and it would just, and everything would just sprinkle outside. I remember going from a Peugeot 306 to an Alpha 145 Cloverleaf, whose aerodynamic quality totally mystified me, because I spent about a week with the, if anyone sat in the passenger seat, the fag ash would come round the back of both of our heads and hit them in the left eyeball somehow. It had a weird boxy quality. So you did have to learn these things, but the fag lighter itself was just a given. And I just remember as they got phased out and I was still, you know, partial to the odd smoke, you'd think, well, this is most inconvenient. And then, so it went from the, you optioned on BMW, the delete smoking package.
Yeah.
Which you were encouraged to do. And then, of course, very quickly it became that you had to actually ask them to put a fag lighter in now. I think unless you buy a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, there is no option to have a cigarette lighter put in a car anymore. I don't think you can even have it.
Smoker pack on Porsche.
Yeah, smoker's pack.
Is there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I do it because you need the charger.
Even that's because of now USB ports and stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't believe that it's still possible to have this device where, like Edward says, you press the button in, you take it out, and there's this glowing red hot firebrand thing in a moving vehicle full of motor spirit. I can't believe you ever could. And I think the cigar light, because it used to be called cigar lighters, because that was rather less sort of common than cigarettes. And
but also, technically, one lights a cigar with a solid heat source. It's much better than lighting it with a flame.
Yeah.
So actually, it is better for lighting cigars.
It's kind of a metaphor. I think it's kind of a metaphor for the change in risk appetite for what we thought was acceptable to have this glowing red hot source of ignition and fire and maiming and, you know, light killing if you were really, really, if you're sat in the back of a Lovett car.
Who dropped one on upholstery? I did.
Oh, God, everyone did.
Oh, yeah, everyone, yeah.
I dropped one on the passenger seat of my Peugeot 306, and that rucked up like a Walker's crisp packet over a candle.
I remember thinking,
the seat was such poor quality, just went...
How hot is this?
Very hot.
What do I try? And so, okay, I've got a crisp packet. I'm on my way to school. I've got a crisp packet.
I've still got marks on here. Back in the autocar days when we were bored through the night, your mate in the passenger seat would put it on and just stick it on your elbow and you'd punch the ceiling or punch yourself in the face. We've all got bird marks down here on our elbows from it. So
I think we should celebrate that it is still there and that a generation of children, our children, can learn danger through the device.
My dad was a very typical 70s doctor. He used to drink sort of half a bottle of scotch every night and smoke about 60 cigarettes a day because of the quote-unquote stress of being a doctor. And I remember when he used to drive to his general practice and he had a Capri, a 1.6 Capri. And I remember blue and the registration plate was GAY 777L. I remember that to this day.
So it was mid-70s.
Anyway, he would always smoke in the car, and I would always feel sick in the car. And it didn't matter to him because he needed to smoke in the car. And I remember, actually, it was my first ever act of sabotage as a seven-year-old. I managed to get a decent amount of brown plasticine, and I just basically stuffed the plasticine into the cigar lighter. It was driving. I just remember him pressing this thing. And this car just smelled as if a buffalo had shattered it. You could just smell the plasticine kind of burning. You could feel the coil trying to catch it. And I'm taking it out with just this long, thin, disgusting drip of plasticine. And it killed the lighter. Killed it. It was uncleanable.
I think
I like Chris. As a sorry, Neil, carry on.
No, the one tip I have on the cigarette lighter is if you are going to buy a 60s, 70s, 80s, or maybe even 90s car, the first thing you should check is to check whether the cigarette lighter works, because yep. that is a good sign you're buying from an OCD owner that makes sure things all work in the car. If you push that in and nothing happens, big alarm bell should ring, because there's a load of other shit that isn't working.
Solid, it's missing altogether, then.
There's a Tuttle customer, apparently, I was told. One of the mechanics was trying to locate something in the car on Friday. And I was told a story that one of the Safari customers likes a cigar at the end of the day. So the car, the Safari rally car, these are quite extreme things, is fitted with a special ashtray and smoking kit on the roll cage. So when he finishes each stage, he's got a bucket little ashtray so he can have his la-di-da at the end of the stage. I love that. And I think many cars, you know, when you see the sort of standard wooden picket mini from the 60s, you try and understand the personality of the person that specified that. All too often, you'll see a crazy smoking kit in there, won't you? You'll see something that's got the space for the cigarette packet. Or for me, you know, if you're right-handed, then it never made any sense to have an ashtray down there. Quite often you'd find people that would have, in right-hand drive cars, they'd have a little pot put on the A-pillar for their ash, because there was no point having it down there on the left. That was for a content. All smoking was essentially xenophobic against us. You know, we couldn't smoke in right-hand drive cars, really. Whereas on the continent, if you're right-handed, the ashtray was in just the right place.
Yes, that's right. A Bristol 47 has 4 cigarette lighters and 5 ashtrays.
I'm moving house next week, and I know somewhere in the house there's a box of cables and Garmins and all sorts of things that connect to the cigarette lighter in the car, which I'm sure I'm going to have to throw it out, because I'm not sure if anyone uses any of these things anymore. Yeah. I'm sure I've also got a couple of drawers of DVDs somewhere as well, which have been in the same drawer for 10 years.
There used to be that little, almost like a single element kettle device, single element boiling water thing that you could plug into. Somebody thought it was okay in a moving vehicle.
I know.
My mum used to make tea driving along in the Escort
One. I used to do it, which was...
Don't you remember the Nescafe commercial? That very, very good looking girl who split
in
up...
In a beetle. Friend. Was it a beetle?
Yes, exactly. And she pulls off on a cliff and at sunrise. She drinks her Nescafe, which she's heated up with that element.
And it wasn't a cost thing. It wasn't, I mean, I was a student and we all had them because it was cheaper than a kettle. But it was something you plugged into the wall. This was something you plugged into the cigar lighter.
Cigarette lighter, yeah.
Somebody thought, that's fine.
Tell us in the comments the most ridiculous thing that you have that connects to your cigarette lighter.
That's going to go wrong quite quickly.
The only one I've kept of all that box of crap, the only one I've kept is the little thing that allows the old radio in your old car to connect to a frequency that your iPhone can then talk to.
Oh, that was good. You could also just have
a... Went, didn't it?
They also had a cassette, didn't they? You could put a cassette
I've got,
in.
I've got
cable,
those are good for old cars. Other than that, it's all a death row. Okay, so we're going to do one more topic, chaps. Then we're going to, because Edward's demanding that I get to Dunsfold quite soon. We're going to do, then we'll do our two car garage, and we'll do some music afterwards. So I reckon we'll talk about.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Self-maintenance on cars. We're going to go straight to Neil Clifford, who, if he actually maintained his own cars, wouldn't have time to have a normal job. So how do you work, Neil? And just how handy aren't you with a spanner?
Completely and utterly useless, guaranteed to break anything and make it worse. And the big frustration I have with myself, amongst many things I have with myself and frustration, is... I'm always so excited to go somewhere in the car that I never check the oil. I never check the, you know, I walk around, see if any of the tires are flat. It's a visual check as opposed to an air check.
Yeah.
I rarely, but that's not even true. I never check water. And then I feel really guilty because I really give my kids a lot of pressure. Make sure you check your oil. If you're going on a big journey, my daughter's going to the Cotswolds tomorrow, check your oil. You know, I have to do it for her. So I check my kids' stuff because, you know, you don't want them to break down or have a crash or have an accident. And have they got antifreeze and have they got the stuff in the washer bottles? I do it for my kids. I never, ever check myself. And we do, you know, well, I'm lucky to have a Pat. And I'm lucky to have a Graham, and I have two wonderful people that sweep up, frankly, behind me because I'm useless at remembering to check anything. It's a big problem.
I think the phrase sweep up behind me is incredibly apt here, certainly for me. Chris Cooper, what do you think?
So we don't need to check oil and tyres and water because it's all on the dash. It's just, you know, the tyre pressure thing, those tyre pressure monitor things.
But
you look at the old stuff you would do. My minis, I'm obsessed with checking the air pressure on just because I can. And I've got one of those, I usually have it on my desk, one of those little rubberized, little circular air tire pressure gauges you just plug in. It might be in my little office drawer here. But I have, on the farm here, there's a Mikey. And Mikey looks after VWs and sort of anything. In fact, one of the guys in the office here yesterterday, last night before he was leaving, said, "Oh, I've got a bit of a flat tire. Do you know what I guess? I've got a Mikey. Go and see Mikey." So Mikey, just around the corner where one of my garages is, went round and he said, and because he's a Mikey, he's got his air pressure thing could inflate a jumbo jet. So Alex, my colleague, said, I'm just going to get my tire done. I'll be back in 5 minutes. No, you won't. You'll be back in 10 seconds. And he came back with this big smile. For how fast was that? So you kind of checking oil. I do check oil in old stuff.
Do you? I don't. I should.
I do, because it uses a lot more oil. And it kind of, something really satisfying in the workshop over here of having a row of oil cans and oil of, I've still got a can in there of mineral oil I bought in 1997 when I had my first 911.
But won't it be shit now? Why haven't you chucked it away?
That's not the point. It's just the nostalgia of, I bought that oil years and years ago. What's the matter with him?
He's turned into a git.
I just don't have that OCD. I really don't. And I sort of split you two.
I haven't even started on my OCD.
No, we know how bad that is. Well, some of us do.
I like to think
in an emergency, I can think laterally enough to help get myself through something. But it was interesting this last week when we would come back, you know, that rally that we just did is very rough. And car had a few issues to start with because it hadn't run much. And you'd come back into service. You haven't got long in service. You've got 25 minutes. You come in and you park up and the Tuttle drives a great. It's up on its jack straight away and everyone's looking at it. And then, you know, the great Derek Dauncey, who ran Ken Block for 10 years and who's Mitsubishi Rally Art, he'd go, "So what's your feedback?" And I'd tell him. And then I'd start to self-diagnose. And I was always wrong. You know, I'd always identify something and I'd get it a bit wrong. And I'd think to myself, I am quite shit at this. You know, I can give feedback. I can do the feedback on setup. But if there's a noise, I think it's the left rear trailing arm. It turns out it's the drive shaft instead. I'm always a bit out.
Yeah.
So I've said in the past on this podcast that I love seeing people do things that I can't do. And the apotheosis of all of that for me is watching a really good mechanic work on a car.
That's true.
I love it. To the point where I can remember going to a well-known Ferrari specialist in the Cotswolds and actually impishly turning up 2 hours early just because I knew they'd still be working on my car and I'd get to see someone doing something on a 512 TR engine. And I just, I have utmost respect for it. And actually, there's nothing that I reckon the person that can help you with your cars is up there with your other half, really. They're so
and your
they're
doctor,
so intrinsic to your life.
Yeah, there's Mikey, last week, weekend before last, he's got an Astra work van, and he had it up on the ramps. And there was some liquid pouring from out of the bottom of it into a little bucket at the bottom. I said, Mikey, what's happened? He said, somebody down the lane pulled out of a junction. It's a single track lane. Somebody knows it was like, he was going past it, literally T-boned him, literally pushed him across the lane. Insurance company said, it's a write-off. Said, so what's that? He said, well, it had 3/4 of a tank of diesel, which I didn't want to lose. It's impossible to get it out. So I lifted the thing up, punctured the tank for the diesel, draining it out. I'm going to use it for the heater in my workshop.
Oh, that's
genius. Was that? And I thought,
brilliant.
That ingenuity, that sort of economy of thinking and a way of life. I applauded it. And I, you know, like you, Mark, I've said before on here, the skill I'd really like to have is that sort of skill on the spanners. And you know, think, hang on a minute, you've still got 3/4 tank of diesel. I know the insurance is going to pay off the car, but I've still got 3/4 tank of diesel in there. I could use that in my heat diesel heater in the workshop.
And I think of all of the ones
we need
I've
a Mikey
seen,
in our life.
Great, you know, great mechanics in the, you know, that just work on street cars, and there's racing mechanics, street circuit mechanics. But for me, watching rally mechanics on the hoof, you know, when they've just got a van with some tools in it, nothing like a full suite of tools, and the lateral thinking and the cleverness.
Yeah.
Like, there was a well-known episode where one of the first films I did with Fred and Paddy on Top Gear was we rolled a hearse. It wasn't meant to happen. And this thing was flat. It wasn't good. And I remember the guys that normally work on those vehicles are very talented. They're really good. They're a great crew. But my friend Shippy got involved. People will know the name Shippy comes up because he's just a genius mechanic. Anyhow, these guys went to get some pizza at 1 a.m. When they came back, the hearse was ratchet strapped to the side of a building. So he'd ratcheted the whole thing up. He worked out the only flat surface he had that he could work with was the side of the building. So the vehicle, if that's the side of the building, the hearse was strapped to the side of it. And he was just pulling the A-pillars out like that, just casually pulling them out with ratchet straps. Yeah. I could, it's cryptic fact stuff. I could have sat there for a week and I'd have still been there on the ground with a hammer whacking. Yeah.
That reminds me, you can tell who's got skill, that kind of skill, if you give them a dismantled ratchet strap mechanism, the bits of metal and the straps, and say, right, thread that for me.
Oh, it's impossible.
That separates them from those who know from those who don't. And I'm next week, I'm going to, because I've got this trailer now, which has got ratchet straps. And I sort of don't disassemble them because I can't put them back together.
No. And also, when you get one the wrong way around, so it's actually winding inwards, like an ingrown.
It's winding
trail,
out. Yeah.
And you think, I'll carry on with this. I'll style it out, and eventually you break the ratchet because that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Edward Lovett, do you maintain your own metal, or do you give it to a man?
Well, my mechanical checks consist of opening the car, putting the key in, turning it, hoping it starts. And if it starts, then I'm good to go. I'm good to go. If it doesn't start, then it's for sale immediately. I don't care what's wrong with it. I don't care whose fault it is.
But cleans the cigarette lighter.
It's for sale.
I can confirm he's not lying, because the other week his G-Wagon didn't start. And I just got a message saying, I'm selling it straight away.
Now, that's why you don't leave London. That's why you don't leave London. I've got there's one other guy I've got. If everyone watches that Certain Farming series, every farm has a Caleb on it. Our Caleb is called Keith. And Keith can fix anything. So the tractors, if a tractor breaks, you think, where in that impenetrable hunk of 6 feet thick steel is the problem? And Keith will say, it's there. And then half an hour later, this behemoth of a tractor is totally disassembled on these enormous axle stands and bits of wood that are just the right height. And it's got the gear out of it, which is like this big. So between Keith and Mikey, we can fix anything.
Chris and Neil, question for you. Where do you think the battery is located in a G-Wagon?
Under the rear seat?
The rear seat.
I'd say back seat, yeah.
It's not. It's located in the. It's in the. It's in the rear footwell below the seat. So you cannot access the battery.
You've got to go underneath.
Well, I wish for a massive car like that, a BMW, it either used to be, it was in the back, wasn't it? You pulled the side down in the boot and you could just take it out and put it back in.
The best thing about BMW was there was already always an auxiliary terminal. There was a positive and a negative in the engine bay that you didn't need to get to the battery. So you could just jump it.
Yeah, well, in all fairness, that does exist. But I, you know, in the moment of crisis when I couldn't access it and I didn't have a jump, I didn't have a jump pack, or I couldn't find them, because the last time I took my car to Richard Tuttle's, he took the booster cables out. Richard,
I'm just going to.
You said something about rally mechanics. I just remember we did a film with Michelle Mouton, and you know she famously lost the world championship to Walter Robb because she had three mechanicals when she was way ahead. She needed, I don't know how many points. And I'll never forget one thing she said, and we got it on camera. She said she was having a problem with a very sticky second to third change. And she went, look, I've got tons of time. You know, she was 2 hours ahead at that point in the rally. And I'll never forget the line. She said, normally a gearbox change, the mechanics are so fantastic, they can do it in 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, what? And somebody actually filmed the mechanics, you know, doing this change. And she said they did it. She drove exactly the same problem, second to third. So she stopped. Then it was 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes. And then, of course, she lost the rally by 2 points and lost the world championship. So she lost the championship by 2 points. But we were looking at that archive and we decided they were all German mechanics on an Audi. And I think she was a bit of a feisty one. I wondered whether Walter had bung them a few Deutschmarks.
Oh, come on.
That's low. We felt that they'd sabotaged her.
If you want to see a group of people tusk loudly at the hours are required for certain jobs, look at rally mechanics when they look at domestic garages, when they require, you know, 14 hours to put the water fluid in. They are not happy bunnies about that. We really don't need any of that. Yeah. Right, our two-car garage for this week. This is a long one. It's almost as if Neil Clifford wrote it because it's so long.
Can I tell you who wrote it? Shall I tell you which of our listeners
wrote
it?
Go on, please do.
Rowan Hetzel, 4126. Thank you, Rowan.
Okay. This is the long one, isn't it?
It's the incredibly wealthy businessman.
Okay, here we go. This is hypothetical. You're an incredibly wealthy businessman who made his fortune in the tech industry. You have many supporters, but a lot of very powerful adversaries. This means you need something safe and secure for when you enter and exit your press conferences. It must have enough seats to comfortably accommodate your wife and two children. However, you've been blacklisted from Mercedes, Rolls-Royce and Bentley due to some criticisms you may have made. It must not cost more than £100,000, as you don't want to be seen as greedy by the public. You own one of the new apartments at Silverstone, which you like to visit most weekends. You want to make the most of the track, so you want to buy something capable. But you also want it to be understated, so you can slip in and out of your London office almost unnoticed. Your wife is not happy that you bought the apartment, so she won't let you spend any more than £60,000 on your new track toy. It's long, it's involved, there's lots of banana skins here, so I'm going straight to Manish.
I decided that he was an internet pornographer, which is why he needed this £100,000. And you know, I just found it. I found it. 2016 French Toyota Land Cruiser Blindato VR7, 61,000 kilometers. But the best thing about this thing, it's basically a bulletproof car.
Yeah.
And that's what I would buy. 300 horsepower bulletproof car, €99,000. And I think, you know, there's no way that all these people who've been putting revenge porn on your website are going to even see you. You're just going to drive in, you're going to drive out. They might get an RPG, but they're not going to dent your forehead. And I was thinking about the other car, and I've always really fancied one of these. I know they're not the most powerful, the best in class, but I think with a little bit of help from Mr. Cooper and Mr. Harris, I reckon you could both make me a reasonably handy track driver if I got a Cayman 4.0, the GTS. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I don't want the GT4, too powerful for me, but the GTS, 300 horsepower, I think you guys could teach me to drive that, actually.
Good car, that.
Yeah.
Very good car.
Yeah.
Navy blue, very understated.
I would say you've got good choices there. particularly the Cayman. Chris Cooper.
I also had a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Oh.
But I think you'd have to get it from that extraordinary place in Gibraltar, Toyota Gibraltar Stock Holdings. They're the ones that produce all the Land Cruisers for the UN. So you get a ballistic B7 spec Land Cruiser, 70 series Land Cruiser. Not the, everyone knows what they look like. Because you're a bit dodge and people don't like you. And because you're a bit dodge and people don't like you, and you might have fibbed once or twice, I think the lovely track toy that would go sort of unnoticed would be an Alphaholics GTAR.
For 60 grand?
No, 500,000 that would cost you, whatever it does. But,
so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
60 grand deposit.
It doesn't matter, because that's the least of your problems if you've got very powerful avaricers.
Yeah.
Neil?
Neil
Clifford.
Yeah, okay. He's not been banned from BMW, and he's therefore he's not been banned from Alpina. And I'm a new massive fan of Alpina. I've come to the brand very late, too late, but I'm going B5, no stickers, no badges, touring, grey, black leather. Looks the most boring of cars, and actually it's a wonderful bloody thing. And then what's the most understated track car for me? And I thought, you know what? The car that Chris will probably give me a good view on this car, the Golf, because I'm taking the stickers off again. The last of the good Golfs, really. So whatever it was, a 7 or 7.5.
7.5.
Club Sport S.
Yeah, that's the car.
Right. There's nice. Only 500 of these. You take that little Club Sport S sticker off the side. No one knows what it is. You can drive out of your office. Everyone thinks you've got a boring Golf. They think it's a bit weird you've taken the rear seats out if they look closely. But actually, this thing was designed for the Nürburgring. It's got all the little trick bits. Probably lovely to learn to drive fast around a track in that car. And very invisible, really.
Yeah, so good choice.
Those are my two choices.
Have I missed something? Why does the track car need to be understated?
Because it just says so.
It says in the description, Edward. So just listen to what people ask us to do. Come on, over to you.
Okay.
You've obviously failed that one.
No, well, I haven't, you don't know what it is yet.
Let's find out.
Well, I've written three down as my family car because my choice is obviously the last one. But a Panamera is surely, you haven't been banned from Porsche. So a Panamera is a pretty good family car.
Sausage.
I also really like.
Sausage is no more.
Pardon?
Gone.
Sausage.
Sport Turismo, it's gone. No sausage.
They're not making another one.
I'm sure they'll bring that back. I'm sure they'll do a Sport Turismo. One of the best looking Porsches, that is. I've got to say, I really love the look of the new VW Arteon. Is it Arteon or something like that?
Yeah, the wagon. That's a posh wagon.
That's a great looking car, that.
Yeah.
But my choice is a Toyota Alphard. That's got to be the car to get me in and out of London. I slide the doors back. I can put someone
to
drive.
You love those things, don't you?
Well, I'm not sure love is the right word, but there's something about them. And this Lexus XM thing, LM thing. And there was something else launched that looks totally ridiculous this week. Is it Saab or Volvo have done something totally mad?
I think.
Volvo.
China only.
It's the most hideous looking thing. But they're all following a trend. And I remember when Mercedes launched the R-Class, you just thought there was just no buyers for those cars then. And the brave man who bought the R55 AMG. Did they do a 65? 63. Sorry. R63. There's so few of them. But clearly these manufacturers have come back full circle to think that there is a market for these cars. And it is for the people who want to be driven around big cities and not drive.
R-Class had engineers referred to heave, which is that kind of unfettered movement of mass in the car. The R-Class had heave.
Yeah, I'm having one in to test. It was, and we put loads of people in it. It was quite an experience fully laden around a circuit. It did.
Do they still do the elk test in these things?
It wouldn't even, you'd just turn the wheel and nothing would happen. It would just hit it would hit the camera that was filming it.
Just be elk mist. Yeah.
Now, my track car, I'm going to remove all the stickers because apparently that's how you make it incognito. But I think as we've discussed, you know, if you live at Silverstone and you want a track car, so you're going to literally be there all day thrashing around. I just don't want a road car. I need something that I can pound around all day and no brake fade, makes all the apexes. And I think that's going to be a radical SR3, which, given we're in the UK and it's very often going to be wet, a radical on Avons is probably one of the most impressive cars, race cars.
And
in
it's
the
really low key, so it fits all the categories beautifully.
Exactly. It's low. And it doesn't have a key.
And it has a key.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Ed would love it. I mean, just for a man who just cannot obey rules. You've all done well, but I've definitely done you here. Bear in mind, I worked these out whilst we started because I hadn't done it before. So my journey begins in Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe, you might not know this, but Mugabe was a massive Nissan Qashqai fan. And what he did was he had himself a B7 armoured Qashqai made, but it had inside it Nissan GTR running gear. So it looked ordinary. It had the pace and it had very thick bulletproof glass windows. That vehicle just happens to have come up for sale on an auction platform called Collecting Cars. And I bought it for under £100,000. So I can't think of a more discreet way. So all the neighbours think I've got a Nissan Qashqai, but I've got 800 Litchfield tuned horsepower under my right foot. And you could stand next to me with a 12 bore and I won't even hear it inside. It'll sound like a fly has just flown into the window.
I think the B7 is essential. Yeah, agreed.
I've got a B6 armoured Qashqai with, and I've got the oxygen tanks in the back and I've got the tannoy. So I can sit inside and just go twat at people when they walk across the traffic crossings and no one will know who it is. My track car, well, there's a bit of a clue in here. I think it's Silverstone. I think this is where Edward has got it right. You need the hatchback idea is great, but Silverstone is a long, long circuit. And in a hatchback, it feels like a long circuit. So you need some power. You don't want too much downforce so that you can actually let the thing move around a bit. And for the money, I think a second generation 996 GT3 in a subtle colour would do me just well. Mm-hmm. It's a good car around there. And also, because it needs to be subtle, I'm going to take the GT3 badge off the back and I'm going to put a Carrera 4 badge on the back of it. So everyone thinks it's a street car, not a racing car. That's my nod to it. Okay. I think we've covered. There's some very, very good suggestions there. I like those very much. Now we're going to move on to our Muzak. Chris Cooper.
Do me last.
I'm not prepared.
Well, there you go. Manor should be prepared. There you go. What do you want for your music?
Well, I was rather inspired by your sheep may safely graze on the piano. So I am going to go for Ryuichi Sakamoto, died recently. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, but played on a piano. Very, very soothing in a car.
Well, I'll get on to that. Writing that one down. Neil Clifford.
Teardrop, Massive Attack.
good one.
Massive Attack. Crystal Band. Ed would love it. You've got anything on
I don't have one. Carry on. I'll do mine.
I'm gonna sadly show how overexposed to social media I am sometimes. You might be aware there's a dance and a song that's currently being imitated by everyone on TikTok and on Instagram, but I love the tune. It's Back on 74 by Jungle. Have you heard that?
Oh, brilliant.
It's a really lovely tune, actually. It works away from the visuals. In the car, it's a happy song. It's good. Right, these two are beaving away. Chris Cooper's going.
I think, because this is always music that should make you feel good in the car and a bit upbeat and positive. And something, bizarrely, something which kept on coming up on my car last week, Taylor Swift. Who doesn't love Taylor Swift?
I don't.
I do. Blank Space, Taylor Swift. There you go.
It's a good pop song, that. That is a good pop song, I'll give you that.
She's done well, that girl. She's got billionaire status.
Billionaire.
Billionaire status, yeah. I don't
have
one.
Have you chosen a song or not?
No, you don't need one.
Oh, God, here we go. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this prime-numbered edition of the Collecting Addicts podcast. My co-host, Manish Pandey, Neil Clifford, Chris Cooper, Edward Lovett, who didn't choose a song this week, and myself, Chris Harris. You'll hear from us and maybe see us next week. Thank you.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.